Welcome to another episode of Building Better Systems podcast, where we chat with people in industry and academia that work on hard problems around building safer and more reliable software and hardware. My name is Joey Dodds.
And I'm Rob Dawkins.
Rob and I work at Galois. Today, we're talking with Eric Daimler, CEO and founder of Kinexus, a company that helps people ensure the correctness of their data integrations. In this episode, we talk about what Kinexus is trying to achieve and give some examples of challenges that their customers are facing. We also discuss how they've taken concepts from math and use those to ensure that their clients are combining their data in ways that are logically consistent with respect to their business rules. Let's start the episode.
Designing, manufacturing, installing, and maintaining the high-speed electronic computer, the largest and most complex computers ever built.
Thanks for joining us, Eric.
Good to be here.
So I wanted to start by just asking you to sort of give us a high-level overview of what you and your company are really interested in doing and what you're really trying to do.
Sure. So Kinexus is a software as a service company developing a product based on a discovery in math, which is probably the first and only company you're going to hear about this year that has done that. I mean, to have MIT say it, it's the first spin out of MIT's math department in the history of the Institute. So Kinexus is in that way, literally unique in developing software based on math. The domain of math is in category theory, and the application for it, we are using in applications on databases. So everybody's kind of gotten the memo, we'd say, about data being the new oil and all that. What's less known is that the data sources are also increasing quadratically or exponentially, or and then therefore, what's the tough part is in the data relationships that is expanding in an unfathomably large rate. Bringing that knowledge together, which is represented in those data relationships, and capturing it throughout an enterprise that guarantees the integrity of that meaning is what Kinexus does. So I can give you an example. So we'll take a very sophisticated company, Uber, who had a greenfield. They had an open plan about how to develop their IT infrastructure with an effectively infinite balance sheet to fund it and some very, very smart people. That's all true. What we found is that like every other company, they focus on the business, not optimizing for an ideal IT infrastructure. So Uber then had the problem of this large complex system around the world that was responsible to business owners by jurisdiction or by city, then had a problem. So Uber has a problem of business intelligence questions. What is the driver supply given its championship weekend? Or what is the privacy lattice for Massachusetts versus France for driver's licenses versus license plates? Those sort of everyday, day-to-day business questions were really difficult for them to execute on when they then had 300,000 databases. So this is a very rich company with very smart people with a greenfield opportunity, but still had a non-optimal IT infrastructure. They then looked about how to solve this, what sort of commercial solutions involved or existed to try to integrate the data or bring together these data models. They had Stanford in their backyard and explored the landscape of solutions to solve this problem. They, like many of Kinexus's customers, found that the solution lay deeper than the computer science, where me and my founders' PhDs are in. It lies in the math. So they looked at this domain of math called category theory, which is a type of meta math, and that meta math helps solve the problem. So we happen to be 40 miles north of them, and we are Kinexus is the recognized leader in the software expression of category theory. So we worked with Uber over a number of months to develop a solution to bring together in one, we'll say, universal data warehouse, call it a universal data model for those 300,000 databases, you know, without moving the bits, right? We're not a data lake or any of those sort of funny names. We worked together with Uber to bring all that together so Uber then could answer these ordinary business questions. To have them tell it, they then save on the order of 10 plus million US a year with the new alacrity with which they're able to answer these ordinary business questions and respect privacy lattices. So that's what Kinexys does for our customers.
So just to try to restate what you're saying, the problem you're really trying to solve, all the data is stored. You're not dealing with how they're getting the data, where the data is, but you're trying to make the connection between what people want to know from the data and the data. That's kind of where you all are living.
We are guaranteeing the meaning of the data is preserved regardless of the context under which it's queried. So we guarantee the semantics as the data is transformed.
I know just enough category theory to be dangerous. So, you know, for someone who's in my boots, like what's the interesting connection here between this business intelligence problem that you're solving and the meta math, you know, the ivory tower of mathematics?
So category theory is not new. It's been around for a while. It was invented or discovered, you know, the nature of math, it was discovered to solve a problem in math in guaranteeing that the translations of problems between domains, you know, between algebra and geometry, doesn't have four become approximately four. You have to have it be exact. So we can describe a circle, for example, on a Cartesian coordinate, XY coordinates, you know, X squared plus Y squared equals one. It perfectly describes a circle. You know, that is a representation in geometry, a representation in algebra. That needs to be maintained regardless of whether you're going to use an abstract math like type theory or set theory or graph theory, which is where my academic research was in. The discovery was that categories or categorical algebra, category theory, could be applied to databases. This the concept could be applied to databases so that the integrity guaranteed by the logic of math would translate between different domains. That's the epiphany. You know, the current solutions that we've run, that Kinexys has run into with some clients, is that you might use legacy software. So we work with a manufacturer of airplanes that had these old IBM AS400s running on COBOL or COBOL running on the AS400s. And these old systems, you'd have migration technologies to be sure, but those would have to rely on testing. When you are in many modern digital environments, the testing is fine. You know, you can use a Monte Carlo simulation, and if you get a digital ad served that's not perfect, it's fine. But if you're flying a $100 million jet plane that is in a high consequence environment with a pilot or two whose life is at stake, you don't want to have errors. You can't afford errors. That's where this math is brought to bear. It proves the integration of the underlying logic so that you can depend upon it with your life. That's what category theory provides. It brings together that logic in a provable way. So in this particular case, this airplane manufacturer has formal methods deployed that we've all learned in computer science school, you know, that help prove a subsystem of an airplane. And we would learn it when we're doing code that we need to prove an algorithm is complete or can prove a set of algorithms are complete. We can do that and that's fine. And so Boeing or Airbus or Dassault or Bombardier, they can do that for these individual systems. But there is literally no method by which any of those manufacturers or any other company can bring together those systems in a equally robust way. There's no provable system for integrating those multiple validated formal methods. Those then get resolved to the extent that they are resolved just through iterations of simulations, iterations of testing, and to be fair, some rather robust physical testing. But that's what we see in the world. You know, I was just talking to a NASA engineer a couple of weeks ago in Houston, and this guy was saying they don't know, because they don't use category theory at the foundations of some of their rockets yet, but they're looking to, they don't know what's going on inside of their systems. The consequences are both that they are left with some level of uncertainty that they don't like, for obvious reasons, but it's also resulting in an over-engineering of their systems. So they will put extra whatever, extra thickness, extra connectors, because they just don't know about their system. That obviously adds weight, it adds complexity, it adds cost, it adds time, because they just don't know about these systems, despite everything that we have learned about formal methods in subsystems. So that's what Kinexus provides. That's the sort of solution that Kinexus brings to various industries, from transportation and logistics to avionics to energy.
So let me see if I can rephrase that a little bit from my biases. I come from a formal methods background, so you know, that's the native language that I speak. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is that you've developed some clearinghouse logic / mathematical language in which you can bring these other artifacts that other people have generated. You can bring them together and have them sort of speak the same language in some way. You can integrate these different formal and informal methods, or have I got the right idea?
We are complementary to formal methods. I mean, I come from formal methods as well. That's what I learned in school. Now, this is complementary to formal methods. What this does in complementing formal methods is it provides the optimal path for these relations. Formal methods really doesn't have anything to say about what is the ideal path in trillions of possible relationships. There is a computationally infeasible, meaning infinite, pattern that would have to be solved to try to do what is done here without this abstract math. You know, it's done in quantum theory, in quantum computers. It's done in smart contracts on the blockchain. You know, this is done today. It's just done in different contexts. Those contexts might be a little sexier. So, you know, quantum computers, you know, we would not understand the output of quantum computers if not for category theory being applied to quantum compilers. So that's category theory in action today. And similarly, in smart contracts, that the sophistication of smart contracts wouldn't be enabled if not for category. It's category theory. It's just that. And type theory is kind of related to this. It's just that it's a lot more fun to talk about qubits and kind of the physics of quantum computers. It's a lot more fun to talk about smart contracts. It's just that the underlying language of category theory, type theory, gets a little bit lost in those narratives. But it's already applied to other domains.
So I think I'm still struggling a little to understand, I guess, what exactly you're combining, because I think I heard we're kind of combining ways of thinking about data and maybe a semantics for data. I think I heard we're combining people's understanding of subsystems. Maybe that's represented as data. I'm not sure. Can you try to clarify a little, I guess, to sort of what exactly are we composing and combining, I guess, in the use that you all are applying?
Whatever companies or organizations or use cases demand of the composition is what will be composed. We have nothing to say on what anyone wants to compose. Where Kinexus works, where category theory is required, is if you want to prove the robustness of that composition. So in Uber's particular case, they could already, in some loose way, bring together their 300,000 databases. It's just that they can't prove that the result is accurate. And that's similar to NASA, similar to the avionics company. They can do a lot of different things, but is it become a sort of data model tower of Babel? You know, the composition is in the rules, is a short answer to your question. But how those are composed is up to the SME. It's not up to Kinexus. How the composition happens in a larger system is up to the demands of the system being constructed. It's not up to Kinexys. What a Kinexys instance proves is a guaranteed integrity of that composition of models or composition of rules.
So rather than focusing on what comes into these, I guess, to software that's performing this active composition, you're focusing on that composition itself and checking that composition is happening correctly.
We prove that the integrity of the semantics is preserved.
Is it possible to do that without understanding what's coming in? Can I know that I'm composing data correctly without sort of intimately understanding the data itself?
So it's not about the data. It's about data rules, data models. So there is a logical data model. What Kinexys provides is a guaranteed integration of those models, guaranteed integration of the rules, so that there exists then a universal warehouse, a universal data model, a universal knowledge graph.
So you don't have to worry about the specifics of the data itself, but you do have a representation of, I guess, the shape of the data to some extent, or some expectations about the data. Are those coming from you, or those the company like Uber, as you mentioned, has those descriptions available in general?
Yeah, we wouldn't define anything about the rules, anything about the characteristics of the rules. It's definitely part of the process that you have to do some degree of entity resolution and disambiguation, but that's not any sort of secret sauce for Kinexys. That's just part of the kind of flow chart of work in any of these exercises. Foundational for Kinexys is using a chase engine to bring together all the possible relationships in the exercise that one would go through doing formal methods and look for the optimal path that then defines the totality of the universal warehouse. Another way of thinking about it is this is a sort of deductive database. And this deductive database then allows for a database of viewpoints, or a database of perspectives. So instead of a database of data in a table, it's how is the data being used for a particular user? Or how are these data models then represented in one worldview without requiring consensus, which is just a complete mind shift from how most people have to operate in requiring consensus. Blockchains work that way. They require consensus. I mean, that's why many of these require the energy consumption for the entire country of Ecuador. It's just resource inefficient because it requires consensus. This level of math upon which Kinexys is expressing for our roughly Fortune 500 clients doesn't require consensus, but nonetheless gets to this universal data model that then can be queried any which way a user wants.
So I wonder if I could dial in a little bit more to this. You've mentioned this notion of rules a couple of times, and I feel like I'm still struggling to have a good mental model of what you mean by that. Because to me, when I talk about rules and databases, I go back to my old, database 201 course or whatever, and it talks about like data invariants that you have to satisfy. I get the feeling you're talking about something else, but I'm not quite sure what yet. Are those like views, or are they invariants on the data, or are they like ways that you combine data together?
Yeah, a helpful way to think about that maybe is a logical data model in the database. So whatever your logical data model is, then and however it's represented, whether it's represented in Excel or some other way, it's that logical data model representation that then is put into the semantics of a Kinexys instance, which is essentially like SQL. And it's just that representation with a Kinexys instance software that then is able to deduce what is the optimal connection between those models or those relationships. We call them rules. We call them business requirements, if that's better.
And so you've called, I think a couple of times you've said, a Kinexys instance. So you're going in, you have a piece of software that is this usually installed in your company's cloud, or is this is something that you all run locally and they access as a service?
Yeah, we are a software as a service company in that this is just a license, but so it's a cloud native, but it can certainly also be run on prem. You know, with our financial services clients and with some of the clients in governments, you know, they want it to be run on prem, which is also fine.
And so, I guess as a user of one of these instances, am I asking it questions directly, or is it kind of keeping an eye on things and telling me whether things went well or not? How do I interact with this thing?
So you're querying this universal data warehouse, call it, and what it is going to tell you in response is if there are any logical contradictions. So it can give you a use case how that might appear. You know, we work with this big engineering firm, and this engineering firm happens to do oil and gas exploration. So their workflow goes like this, that they have exploration that then says, hey, can you do a well drill here? We think there is some resources to extract. So the well people, they look at the situation, find that the ground is a little softer than normal, and have to modify part of their well. Then it goes down to approval, and then fabrication, and then distribution, and then it gets down to the people that actually dig the hole. The people that dig the hole also had to modify their approach because the ground was a little softer than they had expected. Well, that approach then broke the flange that was modified back at the first sequence. And that's a problem because then the flange falls in the hole, and they have to fill it up with cement, and they have to move the rig. And apparently this thing costs a lot of money. The story we hear is $50 million, which is just a mind-boggling amount. And you know, nobody wants that. You know, we've heard amounts of $100,000. We even heard of $500 million error like this. No lives are lost, but like a lot of money and time. And you know, that's a bad day. So these companies spend a lot of time then to prevent these things, iterating through data models. Before actually fabricating the flange, before getting approval for the flange, they'll send that model down the flow chart. And then it'll iterate back the first time and then down the flow chart. And this happened in this particular instance as well. But if you rely on just doing Monte Carlo simulations and test and fail or test and pass, you're going to have these errors in some number of times. I mean, one error we had heard was a mistranslation of this footnote from Mandarin to Spanish. And actually it was the leaving out of a footnote. So the footnote forgot to be translated. These are things to be avoided. And as data relationships, that's how we started out. We're saying data is growing quadratically, data sources are growing quadratically, data relationships are just unfathomably large. So as data relationships get to be so big, or if you just think your ordinary database, as you think your row count getting to be so large, you have to think in abstractions, because you can't be thinking of trillions of data points the same way you'd had before. And you know, the column names kind of don't quite speak to all the ways in which your data can be represented. So this particular client of Kinexys, they've come to the realization that the different approach that is represented by the math of category theory is the requirement that we bottoms up foundationally agree on the logical data model for each of the many different contexts. So one engineer has a logical data model, another engineer has a logical data model. So the logical data model here for the person that designs the well, then another logical data model for the person that's going to drill the hole. Those get combined into this universal data warehouse. Whenever all of us would then add or subtract from our own universal data model, what we then just find is, as it gets integrated, that logical contradictions would get exposed. That's it. It's really as simple as that. It gets uploaded. You know it's definitively proved. Sorry. And then you get to see whether there's a contradiction or whether the integrity was maintained.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like, if I've understood right, the main goal here is to sort of encode the important rules that the business cares about in such a way that you can monitor and make sure that they're all, in some sense, consistent. You know, like the guy the guy drilling the hole isn't making a different assumption than the guy building the flange that's supposed to fit on it. And by bringing those together, you can expose when those things don't match up so that they can be fixed before you spend $50 million building the wrong flange.
You got it exactly.
Okay.
That's it. That's exactly it. And I'll even go further with how you perfectly represented it, which is, this isn't magic. And so we don't read anybody's mind. So the important part you said at the beginning is worth repeating, which is, you're encoding in logic the rules you care about. Well, you know, yes, it has to be really all the rules.
Right.
You know, if it's whatever portion you leave out is the portion that can't be considered for logical contradictions.
And who's doing this encoding? Because obviously the rules exist in, you know, for each company in a range of different forms, right? But you need to have some representation of these things that probably relates to the data models, and also is something your tools can consume, right?
Yeah. Now this is just a brilliant sequence of questions here. You guys got it exactly, and you just defined our engineering roadmap, because you know, what you have to do is define by customer, or really by, for these very large companies, even the divisions of the customers, how they input their own logical data model. So we can import anything. You know, we haven't experienced yet any sort of technical risk in taking what we receive into a universal data model. But we have to allocate resources to do that, whether it's Excel or whether it's in, like I said, or whether it's an Oracle or, you know, some other form, you know, as long as it's not in PDFs, which would be the worst.
Based on more on kind of the formal methods experience, one of the things I would expect, and I'm curious if you've experienced this, is like even that act of, well, we're going to take this kind of, you know, maybe shaky notion, or this more less consistent kind of notion of our business logic, and we're going to encode that into a really concrete, meaningful form, you know, probably with the semantics. My expectation based on formal methods experience is that you'd actually find problems even in that step before you kind of take the next step of actually, you know, sort of thoroughly checking for logical inconsistencies.
You know, I think that the logical data model as it's represented by the business is sort of manifestly their best case for how they run the business. We're not going to second guess that. You actually point out another really great point about implementing any part of these systems, which is that taking what they've already done and just proving that is so much more effective than giving them yet another new tool that will inevitably have some gaps and that'll take time to work out. So we want to just make this as easy to our customers' workflow as possible, and that's what we're working to do.
And then I guess my other question is, what if I'll imagine I'm a customer, but on the other end, what am I supposed to do when I query your instance and it's like, well, there was an inconsistency? Obviously, I don't act on that data in the way that I would maybe have otherwise, but where do I go from there? Do I just keep querying and only act on the data where we don't see problems, or can I do better?
Well, I think the logical inconsistency is something you'd want to address. That becomes immediately apparent. It's not like it's going to be snuck upon you saying suddenly there's a logical inconsistency appearing, this Tuesday. I don't know when it happened or where it exists, but good luck. These sort of things get integrated very quickly, and you can see where the logical contradiction will be taking place so that you can bring the appropriate expertise to bear to correct that.
Gotcha. So I should be able to sort of see the inconsistency. Will the tool guide me into figuring out what went wrong and point me in the right direction at all?
I'm going to say that's really dependent on the use case. It really depends on whether we are talking about our clients in pharmaceutical research or our clients in risk analysis in finance, about the degree to which they're going to feel that they need to work on the model themselves or do something else to resolve the logical contradiction.
But the good news is, if I believe I've resolved the logical contradiction, I assume I should be able to check that by rerunning it and sort of right away?
That is the promise of using math. It's foundational. This proves, you know, just like you don't need to use a calculator and every day run infinite queries on your calculator. You just kind of trust that it's proven that, you know, 9 times 9 is going to be accurate, and then 12 times 12 is going to be accurate. You know, this is a proven logical data model. What the challenge of this exercise becomes is that people, organizations will be confronted with the degree to which they keep knowledge in their head. So implicit knowledge doesn't scale well. You know, that is a known failure point and something that needs to eventually be made explicit. That's really the overhead. And that's why the clients for Kinexys are generally larger organizations operating in higher consequence environments. Smaller companies, the proxy for this, not exactly, but the proxy is databases. Under 5 databases generally suggests a simple enough infrastructure that overhead of making the implicit explicit is maybe not yet worth it. Another place where this is a little tougher is in areas where you're the king or the queen, and you can dictate what your universal data model is. So I don't need the engineers to tell me or not tell me consensus. I'll just tell them. And that's the solution you'll find in places like Amazon or Apple, where they don't have this complex engineering system in the same way of an avionics company or an energy company.
Yeah, I think that one topic that I notice strikes out to me when I look at your resume is that you have some public policy experience as well as business experience. I wonder if any of the lessons that you've learned here in this business are things that impact your public policy opinions or things that you think ought to be done or should be done. Is there any interplay between those things?
Yes, it's interesting that you bring that up in several ways. I can first say that I'm really grateful for the time that I had serving in policy, serving in the U.S. government. I came into that job with many of the biases others might have had going to work for the U.S. government, but I immediately was impressed with the drive and intelligence of the people with whom I worked in the Obama White House. In my case, I hope to do that again in some way. That the public services is I found to be really enlivening in the difference one could make. The output, I guess, is it comes in at least two ways that I can think of based on your question. One is it had me see this Kinexys's value as an opportunity, because I've spent my career in and around various expressions of AI, from an academic researcher at various schools to a venture capitalist to an entrepreneur. And at that high level of implementation, you know, just as very, very large scale, I quickly got to see that investors and organizations would be very disappointed with the returns they're going to get on their AI investments. And I got to see where the blockage was. And it wasn't in some of the ways we're looking at it, such as data cleaning or bringing together all the books in the library, throwing them all in and saying, hey, it's integrated, or then sorting them by height and saying, great, now it's structured. I got to see that the difficulty of fulfilling the promise of AI was elsewhere. And that's how I got to find this research that then led to the expression that is Kinexys. On the other side, I guess, or another way in which my public policy experience informs my current view is in encouraging people to be a part of the conversation around AI or around these digital technologies so that they can be comfortable in how these things get expressed. I came to find that many people would not really understand the definition of what AI is, let alone how they expected it to be put to use in their organizations. And this is from any level of employee, from the most junior level employees right up to the boards of directors. Often the terms would get mishmashed around. Often the understanding of what they intended to have happen from some of these experiments, I'll call them in AI, was misunderstood. And I came to appreciate both a way that I could represent AI to members of Congress, which I feel like I had to do multiple times a week, and how I could work with non-technologists, just citizens in any capacity, to feel comfortable engaging in the conversations, even if they were non-experts, even if they were non-technologists. An example of this is that I think that all of us can benefit by thinking through where we want circuit breakers to occur. So as technologists, we think automation's good, automation continues to expand, and that linking automated systems is also just nothing but good. But the canonical example is an automated car. As an automated car rolls down the road, it senses something that it thinks may be a crosswalk, and then it senses something maybe outside the crosswalk. Well, what level of confidence? Is it a person? Is it a tumbleweed? Is it a shadow? And then does the car slow down? Does it stop? Does it keep going? Does it ask the driver? Those are all a way of thinking about circuit breakers. We have it right now where, my car might ask me to jiggle the steering wheel. We need to think through that as technologists, in addition to as citizens, about where we want these to take place, instead of just linking automation and letting people then revolt. The danger about that, and this is in a worth us all being conscious of as technologists, is we want people to be embracing what we develop, right? Our companies, and I might even say our civilization, Western society, is going to benefit from us embracing this, in many cases, life-changing technology. And if we have people somehow resisting it because we and this technology elite somehow developed technology that killed people, then it won't be trusted, it won't be adopted, and we will be missing out, perhaps relative to enemies of Western civilization, we'll be missing out on the promise that the technology could bring.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question how you can get people to develop trust in a technology that they maybe don't fully understand. I think that's one of the enduring difficulties of this kind of work.
Indeed.
Well, I think this is about all the time we have. Eric, it's been wonderful talking with you. Thanks for sharing so much about your company and the way you all are approaching things.
It's been a great conversation. Thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Building Better Systems.